like oh, okay. doing it, it got uploaded. So I'm setting this for an hour or 1 hour?
No, 1.5
hours. 1.5 hours, yeah, that's
okay. Right. Good morning. I'm delighted that you folks are all over here, especially for an 8:30 session on the last day of the conference. That shows the tremendous enthusiasm which you bring to this session, because I'm sure that you are reflecting that energy in terms of the wonderful panel which has been assembled over here. I'm Gopal Sankaran, and I'm the moderator for this session. It's going to be running a tight ship, because we have 7 speakers, all squeezed into the next 70 minutes or so that we have time for question and answers. So it's going to be a tight ship. The only thing which I have to admit in the morning, because I don't want to say a lie in the morning itself, is that I have never sailed. I have never sailed, so I don't know how to run a tight ship, so I have requested my panelists over here to stick to the time which has been allocated to them. I'm just going to introduce the panel right now itself so that we don't take up time later on. I'm also going to tell what they're going to be speaking about so that after all the presentations are over, we'll have the Q&A so that the person who is speaking last is not going to be chasing me with whatever object they have. I want to make sure that they have enough time to make that presentation, which in this case will be Janine. The person immediately sitting across me, I should say, is Dr. Ray Martin. And Dr. Ray Martin is the director of the Christian Coalition for International Health. He has served as the chairperson of the International Health Section. And in all these cases, I'm going to be saying only a couple of words because these people's CV are running into about 30 pages or so. If you wonder how they can do it, please check with them after the session is over. So I'm just going to say that about Ray. Dr. Padmini Murthy over here, she's a physician and activist. She's trained in OBGYN, and she has a number of masters, a string of master's degrees. It's alphabet soup. I wouldn't go into those things. But recently, she has published a book along with Clyde Lanny Smith on women's health and human rights. It's a wonderful book. It's coming out soon, and that gives a greater summary of her than I can ever do justice to her. I do have the next person to Dr. Murthy's left is, I'm going to call everybody doctor. It's easier for me. Dr. Bridget McHenry, she holds a master's in public health from George Washington University. She has more than 10 years of public health experience with specific technical knowledge based in reproductive health and HIV/AIDS issue. She has worked in a variety of situations, Bangladesh, Malawi, South Africa, Togo, and she is fluent in French. The person who is next to Dr. McHenry is Dr. Juan Carlos Negret, and he is going to say a few words when he comes on stage. He prefers it that way, so we are going to do it that way. The person next to the left of him is Dr. Matthew Peterson. He was born in West Berlin, Germany. He wanted me to tell you the year, but I am not going to tell you the year. He earned his bachelor's science degree in biology and pre-medicine from University of Miami, Florida in 1994, and his master's degree is from international relations from the Yonsei University Graduate School of International Studies in Seoul in Republic of Korea in 2006. He has a distinguished career with Project Hope, and he has served, prior to Project Hope, he served as a medical operations officer in the U.S. Army from 1995 to October 2004. And then the person who is to his left is Janine, Dr. Janine Schooley, and she is the Vice President for Programs at Project Concern International. Anybody has a guess where Project Concern International is located? Right here in sunny San Diego, where every day the sun shines and it is always 75. She has been the secretary of the board of directors of CORE, C-O-R-E, and she will be talking about that in greater depth since 2002, and is the co-chair of the CORE HIV AIDS Working Group. With that introduction, They will be talking about, you can see what they will be presenting on, and since time is short, I would request Dr. Padmini Murthy to make her first presentation. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sankaran. See, I didn't forget to add the doctor. Well, he is a real one anyway. And thank you all for coming. And this first presentation will be done by Ray Martin and myself. And because we're kind of running for time, well, we'll try to see how best we can do this. And okay. Well, we do not have any, well, we had to put this up. So you can read that. I'm just not going to waste time reading because we want to get through our slides. And we have no... Now, the word NGO, even though it's not alphabetically, N, G, and O are not next to each other, it's a very powerful combination of words in today's world. And this has been defined by the World Bank as private organizations that pursue activities to relieve suffering, promote the interests of the poor, protect the environment, provide social services, or undertake community development. NGOs can be local, national, or international, as we know, and they've really undergone a transformation in the past 10 years. And at present, NGOs are really indispensable. And most of us, whether we are officially affiliated with an NGO or not, in our own way are really little very important parts of the global community of NGOs. Just a brief slide about the origin and history of the NGOs. They are thought to have been in existence since the mid-19th century. And at the UN Congress in San Francisco, again in California, in 1968, a provision was made in the Article 71 of the Charter of the UN framework that qualified NGOs in the field of economic and social development and to receive consultative status with the Economic and Social Council. So basically, according to the UN Charter, NGOs either have an affiliation with the ECOSOC, that is the Economic and Social Council, or with the DPI, that's the Department of Public Information. And there are the types of NGOs depends on the geographic classification, as you can see, international and regional and national, and then local, and also based on the area of the focus. So you have some which are membership associations, humanitarian, human rights, educational, environmental, and women's NGOs. And also there are children's NGOs and youth NGOs, peace and conflict NGOs, the list goes on, but I just put down a few so that we know how they are classified based on an area of focus. Now, the role of NGOs, you have this little pie chart graph tells us as to what the roles are. It's development, advocacy, programs, policies, research. So this, in a nutshell, shows us how NGOs have evolved. They like really, they are, not, it's just not that they're jacks of all trades. I would say they're pretty much masters of all trades because that's the role which is defining an NGO. And then, so just briefly, we have stewardship, shaping research priorities, and NGOs are working at grassroots with the UN agencies, with the foundations, with the local and state governments. And this is the importance of an NGO is, what does it do? Because a lot of times NGOs are neutral. For example, the Red Cross, the International Red Cross is an NGO. It's a humanitarian and a health NGO. It's neutral, so it can go into territories of conflict because they are neutral. So that is the biggest advantage NGOs have. They have greater outreach. And one of the advantages of working together, especially in today's world, is cost-effective. Because when we share data, you're not using precious resources redoing the same thing or reinventing the wheel. So that's why we need to work together. And replication of best practices. This has proved so useful because a lot of times just by tweaking a practice, it can just be again incorporated into something else and replicated in another area which is similar. and better funding opportunities, because the track record, if two or three NGOs combine together and you have a stronger proposal, there's a better chance of getting funding in today's world instead of competing against each other. So now, the whole changing role of NGOs is this is what it is. Initially, when it started, they were like NGOs were kind of not even that well known. NGO was some obscure thing where people thought that, oh, it's a bunch of people just sitting around who are unemployed but just gave themselves a fancy name. But that's not true. This is what NGOs are really doing now, you know. And I just have this picture because this just shows us a picture of volunteers who are from an NGO who are working together with the local community, giving them information, giving them health education, making them empowered. So NGOs are basically working at the grassroots level. So they are an indispensable part. Tangible outcomes, and this was recently shown at the UN General Assembly for a special session for children in 2002. This just shows the power of NGOs, that 1,700 NGO representatives from 88 different countries attended the special session, and I had the privilege of attending that, and it was really awesome because there was a lot of networking, a lot of information sharing. So, and I am just going to now turn over the presentation to my friend and colleague, Ray Morton, to talk about faith-based NGOs. Thank you so much. Was I good on time?
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Two introductory remarks. One, I am not a doctor. And the reason I say that is for those of you out there who are not doctors, I want you to know that you too can present at APHA. And the second part of my introduction that I want to clarify, because I'm going to focus on faith-based organizations. I've spent 30 years, most of my career in USAID and the World Bank. So my interest, my retirement interest in FBOs is sort of a capstone to a career that focused on working with very large donor organizations. In one sense, you can think of faith-based organizations as a subset of NGOs, because they are obviously non-governmental. In some instances, we, of course, in the faith community, like to have sort of a separate categorization of faith-based organizations. And I notice sometimes in some of the professional literature and UN agency documents, more and more sometimes faith-based organizations are sort of set aside. They are NGOs, but there's a certain uniqueness about them because the nature of them, their community centeredness, and some of the motivations behind people in faith organizations that make them somewhat different than other categories of NGOs. In the health field, I sometimes encounter the idea that working with faith-based organizations is a new idea. Faith-based organizations invented hospitals. Faith-based organizations invented a focus on education and social development in international development. So it may be that in some circles, it may be new to some people to think of seeking intentionally to collaborate with FBOs. But FBOs have been on the scene in many development activities much longer than governments generally have been. Unique characteristics of NGOs, I won't discuss these, but they've been around forever, as I said. One key thing that you should carry with you is that a common estimate, often used by WHO, is that 40% of healthcare services in sub-Saharan Africa are delivered by faith-based organizations. They're huge. And religious organizations are around forever. You know, they don't come and go depending on the length of a grant from some donor. They're generally very community-oriented, often have a reputation of being caring, a reputation of integrity, and providing quality care. Also, in advocacy, very often in faith leaders, in this country we see it, of course, too, and in many African countries, for example, it's often religious. It's religious Muslim leaders or bishops or Catholic priests and so forth who have a great deal of authority. On the weakness side, one of the reasons that faith-based organizations are often sort of overlooked is that we don't generally have a whole lot of resources. So we don't, we're not able to publish glossy papers, and often are absent at policy discussions and so forth. It's partly our own fault. Sometimes we should be more bold in talking about the unique characteristics and contribution that we can make, and we don't do that. Sometimes we have negative impacts, stigma, and some of the religious organizations and their gender attitudes. There are changes. The U.S. government provides quite a bit of funding through FBOs, and that's increasingly the case with other donors, too. WHO now has a partnerships division with people specifically concerned about collaborating with faith-based organizations. And I think that's primarily because people are beginning to realize the magnitude of the religious organizations in health, and they realize that if they want to achieve objectives, they have to engage that capacity. If you're interested, a couple of very interesting examples of how faith-based organizations partner with governments and other donors is the Congo. I won't go into detail because of time, but this varies quite a bit from country to country. Some countries' governments are sort of lukewarm about collaborating with FBOs, and some are very, very engaged. And I think this is this the last one? Go ahead. Yeah, okay. And I'll be around at to the end. And we ourselves have a network of Christian agencies working in health and collaborate interfaith as well. And if you're interested in those possibilities, I'd like to talk to you afterwards. Awesome. Thank you.
I have to leave because I have something else I have to leave.